Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks again for being here. It is the Mike Broomhead Show. The political landscape starting to become more and more clear. More candidates declaring their candidacy for the big offices that will be in 2022. One of those, of course, is the governor's office. And one of those candidates now is former Congressman Matt Salmon. He joins us. Matt, I got to start off by asking you the simple question. Why? Why jump into this mess again?
Well, Mike, I think that we're at a throat here right now in Arizona. You know, the media, national media is saying that we're a blue state. We've got lots of folks moving from California, and we welcome them. But we just hope that the reason they're leaving California isn't what they're trying to bring politically to Arizona. You know, we are a state that stands for freedom and prosperity and conservative values. And I just really worry, Mike, that if we're not on our toes, you know, the Democrats are going to take the whole trifecta there, both U.S. Senate seats and the governorship, and we will turn into a blue state. And if those values that, you know, the Biden administration is espousing for on behalf of the Democrat Party is what the future for Arizona is, it scares the heck out of me. And I'm not going to sit by and watch that happen.
You made a pretty big splash. I don't know what the word is. I think you left a pretty big legacy in the House of Representatives when you left because of the Freedom Caucus. You were one of the founding members of the Freedom Caucus and the work that they've done. How do you carry that ability to bring people together? Because it's not an easy thing to do. And how are you going to be able to do that in the governor's office?
Well, I think it all gets down to common sense. And I think if folks that you're trying to work with believe that you have the right motive in your heart, that you're trying to do the right thing, I think it gives you a lot of breathing room. I think what people are cynical about and what makes it hard to come to consensus sometimes is when they think all you're doing is campaigning for another office or you're just trying to be the political guy. Look, we've got a lot of serious issues in Arizona, a lot of serious issues. Governor Ducey, I think, did a great job getting our state where it's at in terms of commerce. I think we're doing a good job for business. He made a pledge when he ran to get our income tax to zero. He's gotten us to the goal line. I want to get us over the goal line. We have to compete with states like Florida and Texas and Nevada when it comes to bringing business, and they have no income tax. And I'd like to responsibly figure out a way to get us to a zero income tax because I think that'll help us to compete a lot better. And I think, you know, Ronald Reagan said one time, we subsidize what we want more of and we tax what we want less of. Do we really want less of work and income? I think that's not good policy. So I would like to go in and fight for conservative ideas that grow business, that allow people to be able to pursue their dream. And to me, the best kind of welfare is actually a job. And I want to focus on that like a laser beam, getting people the ability to have a job.
When you look at the how close the legislature is now with just a one-seat majority in the House and the Senate for the Republicans, let's just say that maintains a very slim margin for the Republicans. How do you plan on trying to get things done there? I mean, it's getting tougher and tougher. We still don't have a budget right now.
Yeah, it is getting tougher and tougher. And I think, you know, my management style, my style of getting things done is to get right in the middle of everything and roll up my sleeves and mix it up. When I was first into the business world, right after I graduated from college, I had a really good business mentor that coined the phrase management by walking around. I think you've got to be out and about. You've got to be meeting with folks. And a lot of times, Mike, half the battle is just showing up. And sometimes, you know, just showing up and articulating that, you know, look, we have the same desire. We all want Arizona to prosper. This is what I'm trying to do. And how can we get to yes? So I think a lot of it is just, you know, yeah, we have a one seat majority. The other thing, as governor, I want to really, really strengthen the Republican Party. And I would like to grow that margin substantially. And I think that, you know, I've got that background. I was a state party chairman several years ago as well, been involved in, I've been a precinct committeeman most of my life in the Republican Party. And I think a strong Republican Party and growing seats in the legislature with an activist governor that's right in the middle of everything is a good thing.
One of the big issues that's flared up again is under the Biden administration, the policies have changed at the border, and even our own Democrat senators are saying that it's a crisis. What plan would you have? I know it's a federal issue, but what would you do as governor to try to ease that issue for some of the border towns and for places here in Arizona that are so affected?
Well, there's several things. I'll talk about at the state level, but I think one of the assets that I bring to this equation, nobody else does, is that I've served both at the state and the federal level, and there is a nexus. And I would be using my bully pulpit as governor and the relationships that I have back in Washington, D.C., to, number one, stand up and fight hard against the encroachment of Washington, D.C. into our state and our values. And I think that's really important. I was just with Governor Ron DeSantis a couple weeks ago. He's one of my dearest friends, and I think he's one of the best governors, if not the best governor in America right now. And we were talking about how great it would be to have some strong conservative governors who are willing to stand up to the federal government. I think that the founding fathers had it totally right when they created the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, and they basically said that anything that's not in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution is left up to the states. And I think that the governors have to stand up and fight on that principle. And one of the things that I would do is work closely with the attorney general to file lawsuits and to do what we have to do to fight the federal government when they're dropping the ball. That's one. The second thing is from the state perspective. I've been all around the state in the last couple months talking to our border sheriffs. And I think that the border task force is a good start. But I think that there's a lot more tools that we as a state can be providing them. Now, right now, they're using wireless cameras at the border to help, catch, these criminals as they're coming across the border. And let's make no mistake, Mike, 100% of the people that are coming across the border are being trafficked across by the cartel. And they're trafficking drugs and, trafficking human beings, trafficking weapons. And so this is about fighting against the cartels. And our border sheriffs need every tool we can give them. And so I believe that technology is part of it that can be given to them. I've talked about the possibility of adding helicopters to their fight. And also, of course, I would involve the National Guard. Governor Ducey rightly so has done that. And I think that's a smart idea. But I want to look for every opportunity to provide our border sheriffs with every tool that they have for success, so that they can fight against this illegal encroachment into our sovereignty with everything that they've got, too. And I've talked to several. I met with the sheriff and spent the day with him in Yuma, Mark Daniels in Cochise, and Sheriff Lamb. I've spent time with all of them, and they really believe that the state can do more to provide help and assisting to them and what they're doing, and I plan on doing that. The other big thing is I intend to make them close advisors to what I'm doing, because they're right there on the ground. They know exactly more than anybody what's going on, and they know what kind of help they need, and I intend to give them every bit of help that they need.
All right, last question is, you've been working at ASU for quite a while, and there are people that are trying to connect you with some of the policies on campus there at ASU. Can you kind of clear some of that up, or just kind of tell us where you stand on some of the policies at ASU and where you may have differed?
Well, let me also just state that I just resigned from ASU. When I came into the position at ASU over 4 years ago, one of the agreements that I had to adhere to was that I had to stay out of all politics, completely out of politics, which I've done. And I realized that, I just can't continue to do that. And, this recent policy ASU adopted regarding the vaccinations and kids that didn't vaccinate had to wear masks everywhere they went and had to get tested twice a month. I was opposed to that. And the governor, rightly so, came out with an executive order to get on top of it. And I support 100% his executive order. But the thing is, when you work for an organization, anybody out there that works for a company, sometimes those companies take positions you don't agree with, but you're an employee of that company. And sometimes you just have to sit down and shut up or quit the company. And I found that right now it was necessary for me to quit and to put all of my efforts into this campaign for governor. And so that's what I'm doing. Now, over time, you know, the institution itself has taken lots and lots of positions. You know, some I agree with, some I don't. But as an employee, I wasn't able to vocalize that. Now I'm not. Now I can.
Matt, as always, it's great to talk with you. I wish you the best of luck and hope you'll be on the show many times between now and the election. It's going to be a tough primary, and I look forward to seeing how you do.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike. I really appreciate it. You have a great day.
You too. That is Matt Salmon, former congressman, running now for governor, laying out his plan, and they'll be learning a lot about what's happening. I forgot to ask him about his website. I will get that from you if you want to learn more about the Salmon campaign. I will get that to you here in the next segment of the show. That's coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. My apologies to Matt Salmon. We got so late in the interview, I didn't ask him about his website. So if you'd like to learn more about the Matt Salmon campaign, it's mattsalmon4az.com, the word four. mattsalmon4az.com. I'm going to be a formidable candidate. I think there's a lot of great people running in this race, and he's certainly one of them. I've known Matt for a long time, and he's a good guy. He's one of the good guys, and I'm just looking forward to a spirited debate in a primary. I think it's a great process when it's done right, and I'm looking forward to how it goes here in Arizona, and we're going to bring all the candidates on here so you can learn more about them as the year goes by. Maricopa County residents and 10 and older have been vaccinated at 51%, which is below the national average, I believe. Nearly 45% of all Maricopa County residents have received at least one dose. 1.7 million Maricopa County residents are fully vaccinated against COVID-19, meaning that 39% of the county's entire population is fully vaccinated. So they are now looking at, and we're looking at the demographics. And I'm throwing out all these numbers, and I apologize. I just want to get to a few of them. 54% of those 45 to 54 years old received at least one dose, up from 53% last week. That's good. 48% 35 to 44, 40% 25 to 34, and 39 up from 39%, and 35% of those 15 to 24, that's up from 34%. So we're gaining ground. We're still vaccinating people. And there are two schools of thought here, and looking at the numbers, and I'm not going to get too deep into them, but the numbers are remaining so predictable, which is good, that we are seeing a huge drop off in the number of cases in the people that are over 65 years old. That has been the most at-risk group since the beginning of statistics with COVID when it comes to serious injury or death. The strange thing is they are still very, very low in new cases, but they are still the highest number in hospitalizations and deaths, which means that this virus is still very dangerous to older people. So if we want to stop the spread and slow it down even more than what it's been tracking at about 5% positive test rate over the last about a month. And so we're seeing good numbers in that regard. We want to keep that number low. But the way you drop that number is with the other age group that is significant, which is the 20 to 44 year old age group. That age group of people is in the prime of their life, just out of college or in college, working, raising a family, out in the community the most. They are the most active, but they are also the ones far and away that have the most cases and by far the most new cases. 154. They're the only ones in triple digits in the overnight, the overnight numbers. And if you track them overall, far and away the most cases overall with almost 391,000 cases. Since the beginning of COVID, they are not even close to the numbers of deaths or hospitalizations that are the highest. They are less than half the number of 65 plus in hospitalizations, and it's not even close when it comes to deaths. There have been 733 people that have died between the ages of 20 and 44 years old because of COVID, according to the Arizona statistics. 733 people total. Over the age of 65, it's over 13,000. There are almost 13,000 more dead over the age of 65 than there are between the ages of 20 and 44 years old. So that's a significant number that people have to look at. When we look at vaccinations, I'm not someone that is going to tell someone to get vaccinated. I don't believe in that. I never will. I don't care what the circumstances are. This is something that is a very important choice for an individual to make. I can only tell you why I got vaccinated. We've heard about dangers. We've heard about side effects. We've heard about a lot of different things. I look at the numbers every single day of the week, Monday through Friday. I am tracking what these numbers are doing. We have seen a significant drop off in infections and in hospitalizations and deaths. Right now, we have 6% of the hospital beds taken up with COVID patients and 7% of ICU beds taken up with COVID patients. Those numbers are dramatically less than they've been before. That's a fantastic statistic. We should be proud of it. Coming up in a moment, we got to talk about the other election audit. There's a group of people that did a second audit. We're going to talk about that audit and what it found coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the show. There was a story that was written called The Other Election Audit. Benny White, Republican, who previously ran for Pima County Recorder, teamed up with Democrat Larry Moore and Independent Tim Halverson, two retired executives from the election company Clear Ballot. They did their own unofficial audit into the votes cast in Maricopa County or in our election. For several weeks, they pored over cast vote records, a database showing the voting results of the 2.1 million ballots cast in Maricopa County. When looking at this, they include theories of thousands of fraudulent ballots that were flown in talking about the current audit that's going on. So here's what they said, or here's what they found. The three of them said they noticed in their cast vote record analysis that there was a drop off of Republican support for former President Trump when compared to Democrats for Joe Biden. The trio of analysts focused on voters who demonstrated a commitment to candidates from a single party. That only considered those ballots for voting, and only at least what 8 of the 15 partisan races were up for grabs in 2020. So without going deeply into the details here, we are getting to the end of the audit. The count is done. In Maricopa County, they are working on the forensics of the paper right now. They say that they should be done by the end of June. They've only got the Coliseum until the end of June, and then they're going to put their report together. Now, how scientific is this going to be? How trustworthy will all of this be? That's going to be the question. That's the million-dollar question, is what will they find and who will believe what they find? Those two questions are huge. This other audit that they did was based on data that they're looking at. And here's where my problem lies with this entire scenario. We just had a Republican candidate for governor on, Matt Salmon, who I think is a terrific human being. I think he's done great work when he was in the Congress, personally. And this is, again, from the Republican point of view. You've got Carrie Lake in the race. I think she's going to be a formidable candidate. Kimberly Yee, the state treasurer, who's already won statewide races, also is going to be a formidable opponent. Karen Robeson, who is on the Board of Regents. She's been involved in Arizona issues for a very long time, has got a lot of money behind her in support. So you're talking about a primary for the governor's office. But there are six major races that are happening that are up for grabs. And we are going to be as divided as we've ever been as a party. And I find this out myself. I have been connected to conservative causes in Arizona since 2003 when I jumped into the fray after my brother was killed in the war. And then I was a volunteer on the Bush campaign. I volunteered for so many things within the Republican Party in Arizona. And just because I disagree with the way the cyber ninjas are running the audit in downtown Phoenix, I have been cast aside by so many, I'll be honest with you, it doesn't bother me. I don't owe the Republican Party anything. They don't owe me anything. My job is to disagree and call things as I see them. And in this case, as respectful as I've been to so many of the people down there, genuinely respectful of the people down there that I admire, I disagree with what is happening at the Coliseum. I think that it is the way that this has been run by these companies has been the sideshow that they tried to avoid. That's my opinion. They invite people in to see what's going on, to write about it or to talk about it with only the people that agree with them. Anyone that disagrees with them is cast aside. Anyone who disagrees with them on any level is seen as unfriendly, out to get you, and probably in on the conspiracy. And that does not do well with people. When you look at what happened in the election, from what the data they have, these three other people that did this, they're saying there were disenfranchised voters. That there were some Republican, there were more Republicans that walked away from Trump than there were Democrats that walked away from Biden, number one. Then you've got a huge stack of independent voters in Arizona that voted on the Biden side. And if both parties in Arizona, and I'm talking about the party leadership, because I look at both parties, if both party leadership entities don't start looking at the demographic of independent voters and realizing you've got your base, but you better go get those independent voters. If they don't realize that, they will lose every election they try to run. That's both parties. Everybody wants to be the winner. But then their tent is becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. You look at people that are running from the parties and registering as independents because they don't like the it's not so much they don't like the platform. They don't like the way things are being done. Nobody wants to be told, get in line or get out. And that's exactly what's being said. And if you dare disagree with someone, it doesn't matter what your qualifications or history is, they want you out and you're gone. And the issue there for people is that they will go. You know, the McCain family, John McCain was winning elections for over 30 years in Arizona by large margins. If there is anybody in Arizona that is just follows to any degree, if we said you have to spend $100 in a bet on a candidate that is going to win re-election or win an office, the smart money is always would have been on John McCain, always. And the Republican Party despised John McCain, the party itself. While he was winning elections by large margins, they were censuring him. And then after he died, they still hated him and were vocal about it. And they told his wife to get out. So when Cindy McCain, who, by the way, is the heiress to the Hensley fortune and can write big checks for any cause or candidate she wants to, you've completely alienated the McCain family, and they wear that as a badge of honor. I'm not talking about the average Republican. I'm talking about people in party leadership. And so then when Mrs. McCain said, okay, you want me gone? Not only am I going to be gone, but I'm going to endorse a Democrat candidate. They were furious at her. Now, I didn't agree with that stance. I thought John McCain would have had spent his career fighting the Biden policy, so I wouldn't have endorsed Joe Biden. But they kicked her out. They alienated the McCain family. And they've done this with so many other people in Arizona that there is such a divide that's happening right now. It scares me that you're going to have the real conservatives and the patriots out there, and you're going to alienate all of these other people by virtue of calling yourself the real patriots. And if there's not unification, these six big statewide seats that are coming up in 2022, we are going to have horrible results if we don't see some resolution, some reconciliation. And it's sad to see. And they should pay attention to this other audit and take a look at who voted where instead of how they folded the ballot. Coming up in just a moment, we are going to talk about a controversial cake maker. We've heard these stories before, haven't we? Wait until you hear the latest one. It is going to be incredible. Stick around.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Coming up just after 10 o'clock. Went overshadowed yesterday with the big news about Chris Paul and COVID-19. But for those of you that are ASU fans and graduates, Steve included, Sparky, not good news for the ASU football program. They got caught, looks like, with their hands in the cookie jar. Right, Steve?
That's one way to put it. Looks like they're being investigated for possible recruiting violations.
Yeah, and it looks like there's a lot of evidence there. They're being very, very quiet about this. But Doug Franz is going to join us. We're going to talk with Doug.
Good. He'll get to the bottom of
it. Yeah, from our brother sports station. They keep making fun of me because I say brother station. Sports station's a brother station.
Yeah, that's weird. I've been meaning to talk to you about
it. I don't care. Too bad. It's my word.
I feel like everyone says sister station.
They do. They do.
Do you intentionally say brother?
Yes, I intentionally say brother station.
Why?
Because it's sports. Okay. And I'm sexist, and I think it's a...
I wasn't accusing you of that.
Oh, they did.
I just wondered.
They did. They said only boys can watch sports. And no, but I've always called a sports station a brother station.
For what it's worth, all of the primary hosts on the station are brothers.
See?
To you.
They are.
Yeah.
Not that that's a bad thing. As long as we're wading into the isms of the world, right? So let's get to this one. I want to be very clear about I'm not making fun of anyone because I don't make fun of things. But there is a businessman in Colorado who is being harassed. He won a court case because he didn't want to be involved in making a cake for a gay wedding. So now they approached him about making a cake for what exact? I don't want to know. I was going to ask the question, what does a gender transition cake look like? But I'm not quite sure I want the answer. The answers I would get by putting that question out there. But have you ever been to a gender transition party, Steve?
No, I have not.
I have not either.
I've never been invited to one.
I have not either. But I was just curious. And so he was asked to make a cake, said no. Now he's lost a court case. He's going back to appeal this case in court. Here's the reason why I'm bringing this up. He's fined $500 for refusing to make a gender transition cake. You know, when it comes to the weddings and things of that nature, I've paid for weddings before. They're not cheap. They're expensive. And I don't like the attitude of a lot of the people you have to do business with in that industry anyway. And so if I don't like your attitude, I'm not giving you my money. So you understand the politics of trying to force someone to be involved. And that's the problem with this for me. I don't think that if you are someone that is, and let's turn the tables a little bit. If you are someone that owns a catering business and you are adamantly pro-choice, and I'm going to have, because I'm adamantly pro-life, I'm going to have a fundraiser for a pro-life cause. And I want you to cater my affair. And you say, listen, I am pro-choice. I don't want to help you raise money for your cause, so I don't want to cater your event. Should you be forced to cater my event? The answer is no. If you are, if whatever other religion beliefs you may have as far as your faith goes, if you are someone who's Muslim, should you be forced to cater a bar mitzvah? No, the answer is no. And so, and the other side of this is if you are someone, and I know a few people, I have known a few people in my life that are transgender. If you are transgender and someone does not want to make food that you are going to eat, why would you trust the food in forcing them to make it? Why would you want to give them your business? And the answer is you wouldn't. So this is where the politics of all of this comes in. I don't believe anybody should be harassed or beat up or ridiculed or made fun of. I think all of those things are horrible. I think they are horrible things to do. But you cannot force someone to do business with you, nor should you want to. A wedding day is supposed to be the most important day of your life. It is supposed to be filled with beautiful people that you love, surrounded by the people that love you. Why take politics into it by forcing someone who has voiced their opinion that they don't want to be involved? Why would you force them to be involved other than making a political statement? And the same goes with this. I'll be honest, if the court of public opinion, if somebody goes and says, hey, listen, and post it up on Yelp or any other place, hey, I went to this place and asked them to make this cake for my function and they refused, and people don't go to that store anymore, that's how the free market works. But the government forcing people or fining people for not being involved goes way too far over the line. It just goes too far over the line. And that's the problem, because if it can happen to somebody that like that, it can happen to you. You may agree with what the court did in this case because you agree with the principle. But when it's against you, you're not going to like it. ASU football under a big, big bunch of scrutiny right now. We're going to talk to Arizona Sports, Doug Frantz from the Doug and Wolf Show next.